Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Euro jumps the most in weeks, but Greek debt haircuts are getting larger. Microsoft and IBM are hot, and Google's not. All this and more on episode number 247 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast for January 23rd, 2012. Hey, how are you? Andrew Horowitz here, and we have lots of good things to talk about today. Great show last week, wasn't it? I mean, I thought that was just an absolutely terrific discussion with two great authors, and the book on psychology of markets. Wow, I've been reading that, and that is, it's a mind twister. Really neat. I really encourage you to, if you haven't listened to that episode, and pick up a copy of Market Mind Games. I just thought it was great. I don't often recommend books as highly, but that was a great, great discussion, and I thought a really interesting book. And if you're thinking about, you know, hey, what's going on with the market? How come every time this happens, and I think that, and it really gets me upset, this is a great book for you. Anyway, lots to talk about. We have some great guests coming up. Das is going to be up soon on the next couple of shows or in the next couple of shows. We also have an expert coming up. We're going to talk about in a moment on the VIX and VIX ETFs. There's a great new site out there that has just a tremendous amount of information when it comes to the VIX. And it's these just experts in the area of options and futures and markets, but primarily focused on the VIX. And they write about it all the time. It's all about, risk and how to maybe profit from risk or risk off, et cetera. So we'll talk about that. And I downloaded a list of the various VIX ETFs that are available, and we'll put that on the site when that show comes next week. But again, there's a lot to talk about. Before we begin, I just want to mention that we put a Sunday fun up every week. I do a little something about Sunday fun, a little off topic, but somewhat related to financials. And this week we had a little math problem for you to solve. Yep, not so easy. And I would suggest if you're into any of those difficult mathematics games, you go check that out. It's over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And in the comments section is where you'll put your answer. And I will share with you a little hint. I think there's more than one possible answer to this particular math equation. A little video explains it. And then it's pretty simple. It's a very simple equation, and you have to make it work. So if you think that you're good in math and you are good with puzzles, this is something that's there for you. I think it was really interesting. All right, so what do we got on the table? We have the euro. We have always have the euro. It seems that the euro situation never goes away. The good news is that there has been a bit of a dislocation from where the euro and the dollar trade is compared to what's happening in equity markets. It's interesting to note, I think, that while we're seeing equity markets kind of just, you know, slowly creep up higher, albeit on limited volume, and we're going to talk about what a few people have to say about that in a moment, the fact is that bonds have not really sold off as you would think they should have. Of course, yeah, you're seeing them sell off a little bit, 10-year yield is above 2, and you're seeing some very good numbers in terms of European debt actually come back, because it looks like there is a much greater trust factor, or at least a satisfaction or less concern when it comes to the Greek and the Italy, the Portugal situation. Now, let's kind of, just for a moment, let's really get beneath the surface and talk about what's really going on. Because what we know is this, that 3 weeks ago, all hell was breaking loose. And the clock turns 12, the new year starts, and it's like a brand new world of investments and economies and bonds and concerns about Europe and China and what happened. Well, the first thing that you have happen is that you have a very simple sector rotation play that was being put on in the beginning of the year, which is standard, taken off at the end of the year for tax losses, put back on in the beginning of the year to reallocate the portfolio back into balance by many mutual fund managers and possibly some asset allocation hedge funds and sector rotational hedge funds, etc. Now, with that in mind, okay, so that started, but where to go from there? How was it that we see the euro risk factors dropping so dramatically, that the yields on Italian bonds have come down so quickly, and we're seeing less of a lockup? LIBOR spreads have thinned out a little bit. The euro 3-month basis swap, the thing that we talk about quite often, where it was at a high of, I think, about negative 170, which is the more negative, the worse it is. And now it's negative 75. Negative 100 was a alert area. Negative 150 was a panic area. Negative 169 was, oh my God, what's going on? And now, 3 weeks later, it's like banks are trusting each other. Now, meanwhile, the banks at the same time are really not trusting each other as much because there are record amounts that are being put on deposit with the ECB. So what's happening? Well, very simply, what's happening is this. There's backdoor bailouts that's going on by the U.S. We know that $90 billion has been sent over by the U.S., the Fed, in order to reliquify the Eurozone, create swaps so that there is liquidity in the banking system. Okay, that's good for them. Where the Fed gets the money, I don't know. You know, I'm kind of tired of trying to figure out where the Fed keeps coming up with money and how it's almost never going to be paid back, it seems, and everybody seems very happy about it. So let's kind of move beyond that and not get into a whole discussion about that. But there is this feeling, this outlook, that things are actually getting better. Now, over the weekend, there was a continuation of the Greek discussion of how much of a haircut is going to be taken, the final answer here, by various bondholders. One of the big complaints is that private bondholders are going to be taking a 50-plus percent cut, and put that aside for a second. We'll talk about how they're going to make that happen. And at the same time, the ECB, who bought all the bad debt, is going to get back 100% of the money on the bond. In other words, they're going to get back par. So the ECB could have bought distressed assets, and now they're going to get back all of their money. And a few people are saying, I don't think that's entirely fair. Well, no kidding. But obviously, the way things work in the world of government involvement is not always fair. In fact, it's quite the opposite. The good news is that governments have the power to pretty much pardon, save, and assist in many circumstances because they have the unlimited, it used to be the unlimited taxing power, but now it's the unlimited printing power for their currencies, for money. Now, at the same time, when we look at what's going on in Europe, there's a lot of complaints. They're saying, you know what? Okay, you're printing money and you're buying these assets, but at the same time, I bought this with good faith that there was a guarantee essentially behind this by the Greek government. And if they don't pay, well, we want the credit default swaps to kick in, which they're not going to do because this is a, with gigantic quotes around this, I mean, the largest quotes you ever saw, a voluntary haircut. But it's really not. Unfortunately, the Greek and European governments will not allow this to be anything otherwise because it will really hit home to the banking sector. And that's why the banks in Europe have done so well of late. It's a combination of the fact that they realize that the ECB is going to liquefy assets wherever possible and create this incredible amount of backstop. But secondly, that they also realize that the ECB is not going to stop until they get a voluntary non-triggering event, a non-default triggering event that's going to allow for the banks to pretty much get along, get off scot-free. Yeah, the banks will have to take a haircut, but at least they're not going to have to take a haircut and at the same time pay off the CDS, the credit default swaps that they have issued. So that's what's happening there right now. We'll see in the next number of days what actually occurs. You know, it almost seems like this is the calm before the storm. And I've talked to a few people about this, that it is such a ripe time for a Greek default. Because even if all things are equal, and there's a lot of money that goes into the situation. You know, the Greek situation is never ending. It is not going to get better by itself. And the only way that will happen is if there is a gigantic injection, almost a takeover, of Greece. The Greek officials and the citizens are not going to let that happen. So, you know, we're not going to be calling it Little Germany anytime soon. I can promise you that. So we have that going on in the backdrop, and really there's a lot less fear, because what happens is, and we talked about this last week with Denise Schull, what happened is that the longer something goes on, the more used to it we become, the less reactive we are to it. And already this is kind of it's like air. Greek problem, air. Greek default, air. Italian, well, who cares, right? I mean, I say that tongue-in-cheek, of course. But the fact is that investors really don't care, because they figure at this point, if it's gone on this long, it's not going to affect anything. And if we're seeing the fact that the U.S. economics have not really deteriorated in the face of all this, okay. Now, we did see China. China comes out with their flash PMI last week at a 48.8, which is a little bit higher than the 48.7 that was reported last month, but still below 50 is in the contraction zone. China is blaming primarily Europe on the lack of demand. And again, what's interesting is that every report that you'll read in any publication where it talks about a slowdown of China or other countries, talks about how that just allows for a greater flexibility of the government to add stimulus or discontinue tightening. Now, China, particularly the Shenzhen Index, not Hong Kong, but the Shenzhen, Shanghai, really not had a great year so far. We've seen as low as 799. I think it's about 849 right now. And big swings. I mean, 4 or 5% swings up and down. Most of the other countries in Asia are having just a bang-up year. So far, so good. They were the worst performers, aside from Europe, last year. And in fact, if you look at what's going on, back to our discussion of the rotation, the sector allocation rotation trade that's going on at the beginning of the year, what we're finding is that the worst of last year is the best this year. The best of last year is the worst of this year. Bonds, as an example, are pretty much the worst performers this year. Look at utilities, healthcare, down the list. But banks and materials doing great. Asia, great. Look at, for example, many of the countries within, look at the DAX, up 8% so far year to date. And what we're finding is that you have this, well, if it's down, I'm buying it. If it's up, I'm selling it. You know, some people call it buy the dips, sell the rips. You've heard of that. But there really is that going on right now, and we could see that in a lot of stocks. For example, Microsoft. Microsoft has been targeted and said to be dead money for the last 5 years. Microsoft has been dead money, aside from a little bit of a dividend, for the last, I don't know, 10 years. Really hasn't gone anywhere. But lo and behold, Microsoft comes out with numbers that are okay. A little softness on their Windows product, better on their Xbox product, okay. And the stock has just an amazing move up on Friday when the earnings are released, up about 5%. Big for Microsoft. Very big. And at the same time, what we're finding is that you have to look at, well, why is that stock moving higher? Well, it's kind of a safety trade if you think about it. You know, the good news is that Microsoft doesn't have a lot of volatility. And if there is concern about the long-term potential for the economies around the world, what better stock to buy than maybe a Microsoft? Healthcare was great last year, but you know what? That may have been overplayed. Let's look at something that has not been really pushed higher and look at something that has stable overall growth. It has a dividend, and maybe even it doesn't have a lot of volatility. Perfect candidate is Microsoft. Now, on the other hand, we saw IBM also do better. There's a lot of skepticism going into the earnings because Infosys, a couple of weeks ago, the India counterpart, if you will, to IBM, really put in bad numbers. There's a lot of warnings that are coming out from that area, particularly in the government sector and the payments in that area to revenues for companies in the consumer, in the government and the institutional services / consulting business for technology. And when IBM came out with their numbers, wow, great stuff. In fact, between IBM and Microsoft, Friday's Dow was about 100% of that. If you would have taken those out, the Dow would have been flat on Friday. S&P was up just marginally. NASDAQ was down a little bit. But yet, at the same time, the resilience of the stock market right now, there is high hopes. We're going into the heart, the core, the just absolute, the peak of earnings season coming in the next couple of weeks. So far, it's been a mixed bag. If I had to say, is it better or worse than expected? I would say that it is better than is expected based on revised earnings estimates over last month. And it is worse than expected considering 2 months, 3 months ago on what we thought was going to be earnings season. So when you look at that, you say, well, what wins out? Well, what wins out is that they're beating expectations on the most recent revisions, because the most recent revisions also encompass whatever the stock is valued at the time of the revision. So if there's a revision down, stock should have probably moved down. And now all of a sudden we see a surprise on the upside, and lo and behold, you get a move on the stock on the upside. There's also been some dramatic moves on the up and down. Google down 8.5%. Big move, probably one of the greatest in history on the downside when earnings came out, because they really had some problems in the European region, as they say, and they really were sluggish in Asia. One of the reasons was they basically decided to pull out of China last year due to a variety of things, but one of the things is censorship, and they really haven't been able to pick up speed. Their competitor there, the main competitor there, which is Baidu, which we own, is actually usually sees a big move up or down with whatever Google does. It only saw about 0.5% slide on Friday. Now, why is that? Well, truth is that they have 78% of the market share, and it's been rising in China, and Google has been falling and actually not being there. As a matter of fact, if you don't know this, Baidu also has their own operating system, just like the kind of the Android or the Chrome, if you want to look at those operating systems or browsers in China. So Baidu is really just, we'll say they're mimicking, copying what Google has done domestically and internationally, but really focusing on China. And you know what? That's great. There's enough people on the internet in China to make anybody happy in that area, right? And if you're selling to people on the internet in China, 1.3 billion total people, I mean, how many houses have internet now, and what is the growth rate? It's enormous. So whether or not China slows down, I would dare say that the internet is probably still going to be growing over the next number of years, with or without the censorship. But the communication and ability to get to the outside world and to modernize is really the hallmark of what's happening in the emerging markets, right? Look at India, look at China. Their economies, their stocks may fall off, but if you look at the technology area, and the areas that are really into the whole idea of improvement of lifestyle and, you know, the opportunity to advance and modernize, big stuff. At the same time, consumers don't really seem to be caring too much about anything right now. Look at Vietnam this weekend. And before the big holidays that come in, the new year and all that, the government said, hey, you know, folks, listen, do us a favor. Inflation is like 17.5%. If you start like buying like crazy and start really spending, inflation is going to tick up even higher. Please make this a holiday where you have a little restraint. It's a big holiday for gifts. Do us a favor. Just slow down a little bit. Spend a little bit less. Be frugal. Let's keep this whole inflation thing under control. And what do you think happened? There is one of the biggest spending sprees going on right now in Vietnam. And there have been discussions of probably about $1.4 billion of sales over the recent week for the holiday coming up, which is far surpassing last year's and going to stoke further inflationary problems. Now, a lot of discussion has been brought that, oh, inflation is down from 20% down to 17. 20% to 17? That's good. No, not good. Not good at all. The inflation situation in Asia is still a massive problem. Sure, we saw that the CPI in China had ticked down a little bit last week, but oh well, where do we go from there, right? That's a problem, in fact. The lack of demand and the lack of imports, exports from China and the heightened level of imports, of course, due to the fact that their currency is strengthening. I see that as a big problem, and I would venture to say that that's not going to continue for much longer. They need to stoke demand. The best way to do it is to stop raising the value or letting the free float, or maybe not the float, but the high float level of the dollar to the yuan. So it looks to me like there's going to be a reversal of that. And of course, you're going to get Geithner and the gang in Congress screaming and having their little letters in their pockets and saying that China is a currency manipulator and all that good stuff. Ah, hogwash. If they're a currency manipulator, we're the king of it. Every country right now is manipulating their currencies for their own benefit. Nobody wants to say it outright. They're talking about adjustments and they're talking about, you know, reserve requirements and things. Oh, come on. It's a bunch of crap. Fact is that they're all manipulating it for their own benefit, and they just want to frame it any way that they can to make it in their best interest. And obviously what you have is a lot of just a lot of, you know, feather wagging and just ruffling going on. And then on top of that, you have a lot of blowhards talking about how, you know, this one's against this, that one's against this. Oh, come on. All you're going to do is piss them off. So Mr. Geithner, the kneecapper, maybe you should back off a little bit on them and let their economy grow a little bit more so that they can actually continue to be the engine of growth that we need them to be. All right. I also thought we would talk about some of the specific recommendations and comments and outlooks that are going on right now by some very important firms, and talk about the market overall, give you some ideas on a few stocks that you want to look at and some ideas that you really need to look at. Okay, so let's focus on that. I want to just bring up one thing before we do that. Of course, that is very simple. That you need to check this out. GoToMeeting. Have you done it yet? So simple. So cool. GoToMeeting.com. You know, between your heavy schedule, your lack of schedule, technology was supposed to make everything so much easier, wasn't it? Well, some does and some doesn't. GoToMeeting is one of those things that makes it really easy, because what you do is, very simply, you share your desktop with somebody. You have the opportunity to see what they're seeing. They can see what you're seeing. You can pass back and forth who's looking at what. And it doesn't matter whether you're traveling, whether you're at home, on your laptop, wherever you are. GoToMeeting makes it very easy for anybody that you're dealing with to just join in. And you can bring somebody in midway and put them out on the other half if you want to bring them only in for part of the meeting. I just love GoToMeeting. They have an app actually available, and you can see the desktop right from your smartphone or your iPad or your tablet or whatever you have there. And all you have to do is check it out at GoToMeeting.com, because it's free. That's right. It's free. And you can go to either the App Store or the Android Market to get the app, or just go to GoToMeeting.com, and you can try it free. Click on the little button on top and use the promo code podcast. GoToMeeting is one of those great inventions, I guess we can call it, in life. It's done by Citrix. They have quality, security, just a great, great product. And I do want you to check it out, because it is free for 30 days, unlimited. GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Get It Free and put in the promo code podcast. So let's begin with the discussion on, I guess we'll start with the VIX, because we're going to, there's a precursor to next week's discussion on the next week's podcast. And the VIX right now is, I don't know, floating around the 18 or so mark, 19, depending on where you are. And boy, there's a big change in this year compared to where it was just at the end of last year. The VIX at, you know, under 20, between, let's say, 17 and 15 is super complacency. Below that even gets worse, meaning that investors really don't see any kind of volatility, and especially on the downside coming up. Interesting. But usually what happens is that that does float down when markets are just easily floating in a non-directional or short trend up, or even just a little bit down. You know, you get this kind of 20 number that's playing around. And the VIX itself is right in that area right now. Are we uber complacent at this point? I don't know. I don't think it's uber complacent. But I think at the same time, there could be a quick snap back into the 22, 23 range very quickly from where we are right now. And that would represent, you know, we're talking about somewhere about a 25% move on the VIX, and that's pretty substantial. There's a lot of ways you can deal with that, but we'll save that for next week. But I want to put that in the backdrop of what's going on. We've also talked about the ECRI, and that's the Economic Cycle Research Institute, and they have been calling for a recession. Now, that was a few months ago, and usually what they say is that we don't see a recession imminent, nonetheless, but we see it possibly or strongly happening within the next 6 months. Now, since they put out that particular alert that they are calling for a recession within the next 6 months, we've seen the ECR indices pop up a little bit, get a little bit better. And what's happened is they're climbing a bit. That's good. No complaints there. Still low, but still climbing. Unemployment looks better. Manufacturing is still lukewarm at best. So the Philadelphia come in light. Consumer confidence is up a little bit. We're seeing a variety of other economic indicators looking a little bit stronger. Inventories are a little bit higher than they should be. But yet, at the same time, again, you know, generally speaking, things are better. The stock market's better, etc. So I was wondering, hey, I wonder what they're thinking. Are they wrong on their call? Are they thinking that, you know, this is kind of a misstatement on their part? From what I understand and from the conversations that I have heard, they are still sticking with their plan for a continuation of a recessionary call in 6 months from the time or so since the time they called it. So I thought that was really kind of interesting. At the same time, we see Tom DeMarc. Tom DeMarc came out over, I think it was Thursday of last week, with a comment that over the next 2 weeks, we're going to see a severe downturn of the markets by about 10% due to his models, which he uses. He uses a couple different things. Sequential is one of the big ones that he uses, where there's a counting mechanism that utilizes days that are higher than 2 days before and, you know, a sequential counting of those. And when that happens in a certain sequence, a 9 and a 13 and a 9, and you know, anyway, it may sound a little hocus pocus to you, but it's actually kind of interesting. Well, what happens then? You get the potential for a significant market top. Now, I think that we'd all agree that the markets have been extraordinarily resilient of late and almost kind of a bit Teflon-y, right? Bad news is good news, or not at least bad news, and good news is really good news. Kind of all the bad news bounces off, Teflon. Now, okay, we take those two things. Now we look at Lowry's. Lowry's has a model that they look at. They take in consideration the volume, the level of volume, the movement of markets, the level and magnitude of that volume in a down or an up market condition. You know, how many stocks were up, what was the volume from. And they've been complaining over the last several months that any kind of move on these markets has been really light on volume, non-participatory by investors. And when there's downside, there's pretty heavy downside. Nobody can argue with that fact. At the same time, we can argue with the fact that the markets over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks have been continuing to climb nicely. Actually, let's go back to October. They've been climbing. I mean, there's a couple of hiccups in there, but they've been climbing since the low in October. Now, whether that was buying programs that stepped in and created a short squeeze, or whether it was real investments coming in saying, hey, I really believe in a better economy, better earnings, doesn't matter. They're moving higher. Really doesn't matter why you want to say it's happening. It's happening. So now you have some discussion from Lowry's that's saying, you know, maybe this isn't as bad as we thought it was. Maybe this is the real thing. Maybe this isn't just a bear market bounce or an uptrend in a bear market. Now, that makes me a little nervous, I must tell you, okay? And I'm not saying that I'm bullish or bearish right now on anything, but, you know, because we do see a strong uptrend in place, at least for the next, I'll call it 3%. If we see a 3% drop in markets, we will change our, well, there's a few other things, but 3%, let's call it on a blended index, we will change our market into a just an uptrend with a downtrend pending. But right now we're in a strong uptrend, the strongest uptrend that you can have. And that's fine. As you get higher and higher, what you usually want to do is start adding in some hedges. You want to start kind of looking at the top end is possibly putting on some shorts on those stocks that are the weakest, because if there is a turn, that's where the problems come in for those companies. The ones that didn't participate in the rally, in other words, you know, because they're just kind of being, they're being pulled along, in other words, you know. So when the rally stops, you know, those things are the first ones to get squashed. So Lowry's is now changing their opinion. You wonder if that's a capitulation. You know, they're just saying, oh, I can't go against the grain anymore. And you got to look at that as a business decision that they're making over a technical decision. So you have that going on. And then at the same time, you have things like a trend stall alert that happened about 2 days ago by one of Bloomberg's proprietary indicators. You also have the Spearman indicator topping out and not going any higher and starting to roll down ever so slightly. It's not in the kind of free fall area right now, but still it's in an area that is very concerning. You have oil prices that are still escalated. You have uncertainty in Europe. Okay, all these bad things is like the wall of worry. Do we worry about them or not? Well, you can worry about them all you want, but right now still is a time, or has been a time, I should say, to really gather some great stocks for some really terrific upside. It's been some great upside opportunities here. Even those stocks that haven't been good stocks have been really doing well. Look at Netflix as a classic example of buying the crap. Look at Sears. Sears dropped off. We went into Sears, bought a little bit of Sears, and kind of got stopped out, and I'm very upset about that because it just moved up so nicely, right? Not right afterwards, but, you know, after. But those are the risks you have to take, because what happens is that you can kind of get shaken out sometimes, and that's one of the big reasons why you have to adjust stops appropriately. But now, I want to share with you a few things that we're doing, some things that you need to look at, some stocks that I want you to kind of just look at. And we'll put, I'm going to put some charts up there with a little bit of a discussion about each one of them. And they're all similar. They have a similar look to each one of them. And these are areas of stocks that we're calling trigger points. Now, this is a lot you're going to hear about. You're going to hear a lot more about this in the coming weeks and months. But trigger points are areas of I guess, breakouts and breakdowns, because there is either a big gap, or there is a no overhead resistance, or there's a floor. Or at the same time, there's a giant kind of opening in the bottom of a support zone that a stock can fall through very easily. Now, without getting into all the details, you're going to find out more about this because we have some reports coming out called Trigger Point Earnings, Trigger Point Alerts, and these are things that are going to give you actionable ideas. But aside from that, let's just talk about some of the things that we found. And if you haven't been following us on Twitter, it's at Andrew Horowitz. I put some of these up last week just to kind of give you a flavor of what's going on. We put up ESI. We put up NetEase. And those were pretty interesting to take a look at. And the pricing, you could see what happened right after they broke through those particular trigger point levels. Now, NetEase, symbol NTES, is basically is a Chinese company in the gaming area where they do the massive multiplayer online types of gaming, which is very popular in China. And they were up about 5% right after they broke through a trigger point on the upside on Friday. Now, we've owned this for a little while. We like the stock. We like the fundamentals. The action has been terrible, but now they're starting to break up higher. Why? Well, they're seeing that Google really doesn't have the foothold there. And the things that are bothering the Chinese stocks, like Ascena, is not really related to a NetEase. You know, the idea of having a real name release and requirement for mini blogs or Twitter-like services in China doesn't really relate to gaming online. And it got kind of caught up in that whole swell. So if you look at the stock and you look what happened recently in the breakup, I'm going to show you a chart there that's a very simple look at why and kind of what happened there just on Friday. Now, if you would have caught what we talked about, it's probably would have caught almost a point, about 2.5% on NetEase as it broke through. IPGP, this is IP Photonics, laser company. We're up dramatically on that because what happened was when it broke through from a bottom, it really moved higher. Now, I'm just telling you a few things that are still in the pipeline here. Okay, we missed CF. We didn't buy it. I'll be honest with you. I like the company. This is a fertilizer company. The company had an area that looked like a breakout. It kept on really getting very heavy and wouldn't really do anything. And every time it did, it got knocked down and really had a dramatic fall after some earnings and crop reports. And we didn't buy it. You can't get everything. But the fact is that this stock, it's a beautiful looking pattern, if you will. And again, I'm going to show you that one also. MNTA, this one's too thin for us to buy, but this one is in the air, or it has been too thin. It's starting to pick up on volume. Momenta Pharmaceuticals, this one is really interesting. It's in the biosimilar area. This is where the companies are trying to make generics out of biologics, drugs that, not your basic pills, let's put it that way. A lot more that goes into the process and almost impossible to create absolute generics that are 100%. But at the same time, this company has done a really good job at being right there where they need to be. And if the law passes and allows for the biologics to be made into biosimilars, there's going to be some pretty good action on this. But more importantly, the pattern that I'm talking about right here. Now, it doesn't always work out. I mean, obviously, the up patterns on the breakouts are much better in a bullish kind of uptrend market, and the opposite is true when stocks are breaking down. I can share with you a lot of times where you see things breaking down, and they just turn around on you dramatically because the market environment's not right. For example, Wynn. Wynn was short with right now, and Wynn broke down, and it held down, and then all of a sudden, the market started to move up, and everybody's happy, and Wynn is kind of just chugging along as well. Still, there's a lot of downside pressure on Wynn, and even in some decent days, Wynn has been suffering. I like the company, generally speaking, but the pattern is showing that it should be a stock that either is avoided, not owned, or short at this point. It's getting a little bit towards the top end of that level, I must tell you. So just keep that with a grain of salt. Disney. Disney is in the short, too. If you look at Disney, look at the pattern, you'll see kind of a direct move up, and then there's a kind of a big opening below. And Disney right now, if it does bounce down from where it is right now, looks like it could be an excellent short opportunity. And again, I'll show you what that looks like on a chart. We're not doing so well with TCD, or TDC, excuse me, Tech Data Corp. But those are a few of the ones that we've identified lately. And there's a whole list that we've identified. But I'm just kind of giving you a few of these. We're off on Disney, off on Wynn slightly, and off, I think we're right even on Tech Data. On the point where we bought it. On the other ones that broke out, we're up on. So, because again, you're in a market environment that's more favorable to the long side. No question about that. So, these sell signals, these buy signals, these trigger points that we're talking about, these are things that you need to look at, especially during earnings season. Because during earnings season, you know that things are going to be very volatile because there's going to oftentimes be a surprise to the upside or the downside. So, these are the areas that we've really been focusing on of late in terms of coming up with a solution to, calculate, identify, and create an actionable plan for that. Because, you know, how else can you do it? You know, if you just look at things like a simple MACD or a stochastics, or even look at simple moving averages, it doesn't tell you much other than about where stocks are and kind of maybe if they're a little bit overbought or so, but where is the point where it's going to turn? Isn't that more important? So we've been really working hard in the background, putting this together with a group called TAS, T-A-S, work with Bloomberg as well on this, on their data. And just keep your ears open for that. I will tell you that if you want to get on the mailing list, if you want to be on the mailing list and you want to get further updates of this and find out what's going on, go to triggerpointresearch.com. There's a countdown clock. We're going to launch the site and launch what's going on there. And what we're going to have is a couple of different services, a Twitter-like service that's going to be able to give you instant actionable alerts as well as earnings alerts on reports. Very cool reports, very slick. You'll see all the data you need to see on one piece of paper. One sheet of paper. Just go in there and put in your email and sign up there at triggerpointresearch.com or triggerpoint alerts, either one. I'll put a link on that also. I'll try to remember to put a link. Lots of little things we'll put on this particular website, a show note, if you will, podcast show note. All right, let me regroup here. What else do we have on my list? Looking down the list. Okay, two things. One, silver. Two, natural gas. I wrote last week that this is something I'm probably not going to say, or never thought I was going to say, at least for some time, or if ever. I said, I can't believe I'm actually writing this. And probably right now, I can't believe I'm actually saying this. But we bought natural gas. Tomatoes are being thrown. Why would we buy natural gas? Now, let me just share with you, this is a trade rather than a long-term investment thesis, but there is some very interesting characteristics of this market condition overall, not just natural gas, but this market condition, and at the same time with natural gas. There looked like there was a capitulation last week to the sell side down, where you saw just this incredible drop off in about 3 days, about 12% in the price of natural gas, even in the face of a decent report by on the inventories. In other words, the inventories weren't flush. And right then and there, we looked at it. We looked at the outlook for natural gas. We looked at what was going on in terms of some of the seasonality. And we said, you know what? We're going to buy a piece of natural gas here, UNG. I hate UNG. I don't like the ETF at all for a long-term hold. I think that the contango involved in it, the forward rolling process that goes on for the futures, is just absolutely abysmal. That said, it is a good place to be if you see that natural gas could have a directional move in a very short period of time. Now, is that going to happen? Well, I'll tell you that that natural gas was kind of moving down for about 2.5 weeks, almost, if not almost, absolutely daily. And we bought it, and the next day it was up about 2%. That's good so far, okay? Excellent. Now, the bad news is that, you know what? It could still continue on its overall downward trend that's been on for a long time. But we see that it's getting to a point that natural gas is a viable price for investors to start nipping at. We looked at some reports, and while Goldman is reporting, and this is another reason we went long, Goldman's reporting that they could see another 6 to 10% downside in natural gas, subtext meaning scare the hell out of people so that we can buy it lower. We said, wait, you know what? Maybe this is the time that there is going to be such negativity involved here. The capitulation looks obvious from a price movement. We'll buy a little bit. I'm not talking about a lot. We're talking about a little bit. You know, 3, 2, 5%, depending on how it plays out, of a portfolio. If it doesn't play out, it's, you know, how badly can you get hurt on that, right? It's not going to just, you know, get down 70% overnight like a stock can do. So we thought it was an interesting play. Now, mind you, again, this is not a thesis that says this is going to be a great opportunity for the next 10 years. By the way, which it may be. But at the same time, there is so much drilling going on. There's so much of the exploration going on for natural gas. On one hand, you have to say that it's getting to a point of being ridiculous that they just keep on digging up more and finding more, and there's almost an unlimited supply around the world. On the other hand, you have to think, you know, that being the case, is it possible that some of these companies will start saying, you know what, natural gas prices are getting so low, it's very difficult to make money on this. We're going to slow down and turn off the spigots for a little while. OPEC does it when they try to target a price. Why not? We could do the same thing. So just keep that in mind. Look at that UNG as a possible entry point. I'd like to see it in the ideal circumstance to add to this position. I would like to see it basing out a little bit more and kind of making its way back nice and easily. If it just does a V on the upside, that would concern me. If it does base out here and start to climb slowly and start to bring people in without too much of a whack on the upside or downside, then I think there's some opportunity here, and you probably can make a quick 10, 15% on the position. Which, if you think about it, is just back to where it was at the beginning of last week. Not the worst thing in the world. Hit a low about $4.97. We picked it up at about a little over $5. So, you know, something to take a look at. And especially I mentioned with that, that it also has a lot to do with the environment of this market we're in, is that people and the hedge funds, the various machines that are on a daily basis, are looking for oversold, however you qualify that, oversold opportunities to try to really squeeze the short. And there's a lot of short interest that has been developed on the side of natural gas. And I would think that if we look at the commitment of traders report of the last couple of weeks, you'll see that as well. Now let's get into one other thing, and that's silver. A lot of talk about why silver went up last week. It really had nothing to do with the dollar euro. Gold didn't move up that much. Friday was up like 5.5%. Why is that? Well, there's some discussion about Sprott, and they were some kind of discount to NAV, and they went in and bought the spot market. Sprott is a mutual fund slash money manager that does a lot of work in the silver area. And, you know, buying the actual asset and buying the spot, there's a lot of discussion going on about that. I will share with you that there is a very clearly defined resistance zone right about here on SLV, about 31 and change. Now, I will tell you that we're not going to stay in this trade if it doesn't work out on the short side. We're going short on silver. If silver actually moves up about 3%, very, very small margin of error here, because if you do that, there's a pretty big opportunity for the silver to move higher and squeeze out any of the shorts that are in there. So you got about a 3% window here. Is that a lot? Not really. When you consider Friday, it moved up by about 5%, and we've seen silver move up, pretty rapidly over time in the past. But it also moves down very rapidly. So, you know, when you look at this, I think that you have to consider that it is a trade that you need to keep your eye on. You could do a lot of ways. You could enter the short ZSL, which is a little wonky, but that's a good way to do it. We like that. Again, for a short-term monitored trade, and when I say short-term, I mean, you know, if it doesn't work out, you're really no hope, no thinking, oh, it's going to come. You got to move out, and then if it moves with you again, you get back in and kind of follow it the right direction. Right now, it's a little bit across the grain that we're looking at right here, but at the same time, the longer-term trend is down on silver. You know, if we do see any kind of disruption in the markets, I would think that you're going to start seeing a very substantial sell-off in gold and silver again, because these are the ones that were sold off so dramatically when hedge funds really had to clear out. Now, with the bank stocks doing well of late, there isn't going to be as much as a forced selling due to margin calls, etc. But you know what? You don't know how leveraged they got into the buying spree of many of the banks as they went better into the beginning of the year. Don't forget, a lot of these hedge funds and the big players were really pretty long the financial sector, and that worked out very well for them this year. It was miserable for them last year. But if they did, in fact, press their bets in that area and really margin themselves up, and you do see any kind of a fall off, maybe because of a default situation in Greece, Italy just gets worse again, Portugal, the reality comes to life that they're really in terrible shape, well, you know, that's going to be problematic. Or if you see some declining economic conditions in the U.S. So kind of that's the big picture right now. We're going to put a lot of these charts on the disciplinedinvestor.com over at the show notes. Make sure to check that out. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. Go to Trigger Point Research, without the S, triggerpointresearch.com. Sign up there. You'll just be a part of the list that goes out when we start getting that ramped up. And I think that you'll enjoy that. And we'll have links on all of this. Next week, you gotta be here, because we're going to talk about the VIX probably ad nauseum. But this is something that you need to know about, because we're going to go through the good, the bad, and the ugly about using ETFs and ETNs and various instruments to invest in or not in risk, the risk of volatility. Also want to remind you that if you haven't done so already, I'd really appreciate it. Go over to iTunes and leave a review. There were some really nice ones, thank you, by the way, from the last couple of weeks. Leave a review. Say what you like. Say what you don't like. Just do what you can to make sure that people out there know what's going on. And obviously, it's nice for me to hear what you think about the podcast and what we do here. DH Unplugged is going to be back this week, Tuesday night. We'll release it late into Wednesday morning. And of course, you're also going to have a winning investor coming up very soon. So all those things are available to you at no charge. How great is that? If you want to find out more about what we do charge for, which are money management services, head over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There'll be a little link there that says the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. We also have our global allocation strategies. You can watch a video on all that. It's a quick, 12-minute tutorial. And if you're kind of thinking, oh, should I be in the market? Should I be out of the market? I don't know what to do. Well, this will give you some detail on what you could be doing and how we present it and our transparency and how you could follow along everything that we do, as well as our client blog that's private only for the eyes of clients, etc. Well, until next week, I thank you very much for joining me. It's Andrew Horowitz, episode number 247, Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.